Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, what's up, and welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast, coming to you a little bit later than usual because one of us has been throwing up.
Oh, it's been the worst.
And of course, we're referring to me. I spent the weekend drinking at Splendor in the Grass in Byron Bay and just throwing up constantly.
What was your festival look?
Festival look was myself covered in vomit, trying to get into Kendrick Lamar. No, I wore the same pair of jeans. You know when you like you bring a few outfits and then you fuck up the first outfit and you're like, well, all the other outfits are going to get fucked up too.
Yeah.
And then you just lock in that outfit.
Absolutely.
And you think it's more and more covered in dust, and then you spend the rest of the week back at home wearing the good outfits instead.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Good job.
How are you? Are you feeling not great?
This is the best I've felt in a little while. I don't even want to talk about it. It was so traumatic. Was the
what
worst.
Did you get?
just gastro. To be honest, for a little while there, I thought that Jim from King's had poisoned me because I ate some food that he cooked and I got sick like immediately afterwards. And I was like, fucking Jim, I knew
classic
this would
Jim
happen.
Move.
I never should have eaten something that Jim made. But then
Never trust a man with six syllables in his last name. That's what I've always said.
Never trust a man whose real name is Dimitri, but gets called Jim because Australia is so racist.
And I guess my last comment kind of ties into that pretty well. anyway, this is Serious Issues. Every week we talk about last week's comics. My name is Levins.
My name
Her
is
name
Siobhan.
Is Siobhan. And we get all the comics that we talk about each week from the great King's Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Great at everything except food, apparently.
No, it turned out it was okay. You're all right, Jim.
What was it? What do you reckon it was?
Just run-of-the-mill gastro.
You got to get it from somewhere. Yeah. I say blame Jim.
Yeah. I blame my baby.
Okay. You shouldn't let a one-year-old cook for you.
That was nice.
If you want to find any of the comics we talk about on the show today, you can find them at King's Comics, which is 310 Pitt Street in Sydney, or at their website, kingscomics.com. Now, we begin every episode of Serious Issues by going through all the number ones that came out last week. And boy, howdy, there were a lot of them. And I didn't read heaps of them because I had grand plans to... I DJ'd for like, I think I worked it out, it was like 26 hours all up over the course of the festival.
Wow.
Oh my God. And I was like, yeah, I'll have spare time. But because I was DJing from 12 till 4 and then again at midnight, I was like, yeah, I'll go back to my tent and I'll just chill out in the afternoon and read comics. But by the time I get back to my tent, like the sun would go down.
Oh, did you have to sleep in a tent as well?
Well, because I was like working till late and then had to be there by midday.
Nightmare.
Like, what's the point of like... going to town an hour out of a festival for, I mean, a good mattress, I guess.
That sounds like my literal worst nightmare. I fucking hate festivals.
Ugh. The key is you get super drunk and then everything's fine.
Yeah, I suppose.
You hear that, young teens listening? That's the key to enjoying festivals. So let's talk about some number one issues in our segment, First Things First. There are a lot this week that I reckon you might win this week as far as books that I was just like, I don't need to read all these.
Yeah, look, there were a couple that even I was like, I can't quite be bothered.
But let's kick off with, I guess, the highest profile release this week, and that is Marvel's The Life of Captain Marvel number one, which is a new kind of not quite an origin story of Captain Marvel, but delving into the character's past for the first time. It's written by regular series writer Margaret Stoll and features a pretty wonderful art team of Marguerite Sauvage. I always don't... Sausage. Marguerite Sausage. And we've also got Carlos Pacheco and Rafael Fonteres on his inks, colors by Marcio Menez as well. I've not read Kelly Sue DeConnick's Captain Marvel run.
Neither.
I enjoy Carol, a.k.a. Carol Danvers, a.k.a. Captain Marvel, on a team book, but I've yet to attach myself to a solo Captain Marvel book before. And it certainly wasn't the Margaret Stoll run, which I gave like maybe 4 or 5 issues a shot when she started on the book about a year and a half ago.
Mm.
The very short run before that I quite enjoyed, which was written by the two showrunners or writers for the Agent Carter TV series. I actually really liked that. But that was much more, again, that was pretty much her on a team with this, you know, like Puck was there and like the girl with green hair. Characters I already enjoy were part of the team, and there were great cameos from lots of other space characters. So it felt a lot like a team book. Like, I'm not saying that she's a character that can't, you know, hold up her own solo series.
But she is very boring.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I'm yet to be convinced by a writer that hers is a story that I want to read.
Because it's always just like, she's just like a hard-ass soldiery type who's like, yeah, I love cats and that's my personality. And you're like, yeah, oh, God, that's dire.
So before Captain Marvel was a U.S. Air Force pilot, and before she then got her superpowers and became the world's most powerful super being, she was a girl, just a girl from New England.
Just
this
a
is
girl.
Her story. Do you know my daughter Matilda, who is almost 2, can say Gwen Stefani?
I did see that clip of that. That's my favorite thing ever.
Gwen Stefani.
Yeah, why does she say Gwen Stefani?
I don't know. My wife sent me a video of her saying it. And now we think, while she's at that great age of her being able to just like repeat whatever we ask her to in hilarious ways, we're just going to do like series of, like, I might get her to name all of the full names of the Spice Girls.
Yes.
Or like, yes, you know, just actually going through like an X-Men team could be fun too.
Yep, absolutely. Remy LeBeau.
So yeah, the life of Captain Marvel. I went in this with an open mind, but I, like, it wasn't a bad comic. It was just, for me, like so many Captain Marvel comics I've read before this, just a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah, it was very fine. Like, not in, that makes it sound positive. It was just, I felt no feelings. I really like the Marguerite Sauvage pages. But
me
other
too,
than
so
that,
much. Even the Pacheco pages I enjoyed, like, you know, for kind of classic superhero artwork.
Yeah, and you know, I like the attempt to kind of humanize her and have her be like, I can't be a superhero for a minute. I have to go and do family shit or whatever. Like, I thought that was at least, you know, a good try.
But you don't make her just a girl from New England by having, like, because basically some horrible shit happens to her family. And some horrible shit happened to her family
because
in the past.
Of her. Sorry.
But, like, it was really hard. Did you find the timelines kind of hard to follow in this?
I did, and yeah, I don't know. I don't find the, like, oh my god, my dad was having an affair in the past. I don't find that like a super compelling storyline.
Didn't her dad always used to hit her mum? That kind of laid it on pretty thick with all the kind of tropey past stuff.
Yeah.
I liked seeing Tony Stark in an MC5 t-shirt.
What does that mean? What's MC5?
You know, the band, Kick Out the Jams?
I don't know.
God,
I'm not cool. I don't go to festivals.
Yeah, MC5 headline Splendor in the Grass. So yeah, I wanted to like this, but I don't care about it.
Yeah, same. Make me care about Captain Marvel, someone.
And so yeah, someone's yes. We need to go and read that Kelly Sue DeConnick run because we really like her as a writer. She just got announced as the writer for something over at DC.
Aquaman. I'm so excited.
She might make you be the first writer to make you appreciate what's her name?
Mira.
Mira.
Maybe.
I care about her so little that I don't even remember her name. Marvel put out another number one this week, but you probably didn't read this one. It's the weird All Ages series that I always pick up. You did read this one?
No.
Oh, cool. It's the Marvel Superhero Adventures, which is an All Ages title. This week it was Ms. Marvel and the Teleporting Dog. So it's a team up between Spidey, Ms. Marvel, and Lockjaw.
Nice.
It's really, really sweet. And it's written by Jim McCann with great art by Dario Brizuela. Colors by Chris Sotomayor. I think these are like semi-based on like young readers kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm,
so they're very, very simple, but it's a great introduction to the character of Ms. Marvel. If you want to introduce someone young in your life to the character, this is a great thing to kind of get them into the main series, which is, you know, for when they get a little bit older. Yeah, I don't need to read any more of these. I think I'm going to stop unless I see characters that I really love on the front cover. But this is another solid entry. And there's cool little one-shot series that we get each month called Cute. Marvel Superhero Adventures.
Nice.
Over to DC. They put out two number ones this week that I read the first 10 pages of. And then was like, I get the gist. I'm done.
I didn't read. What? What did you read? What did I miss?
Injustice versus Masters of the Universe, number one. Now, actually, 10 pages is generous for this one. This is written by Tim Seeley with art by Freddie E. Williams II and colors by Jeremy Cowell. I really like the Injustice series quite a lot. And I was like, cool, I know enough about that continuity to see a crossover with a cartoon E-Man. That I watched on and off when I was a kid. But within 3 pages, it's clear that this ties into the last Masters of the Universe crossover event that Tim Seeley and Freddie E. Williams did, which was He-Man and Thundercats, which is like, how much more niche could you make a comic? And while I really enjoy Freddie E. Williams' kind of high fantasy art that he does for this series, I couldn't make it very far into this. It just didn't hook me at all. But mostly that's because of my distance from the property that it was involving. So it could have been a good comic, but
for
not
the
good
three
for a new...
people who have yeah. read everything that is necessary to understand that, I'm sure you'll love it.
The other DC book was Teen Titans Go, special edition number one. It came out before the movie comes out. The Teen Titans Go to the Movies is coming out very soon. I'm excited for it. I like that series quite a lot. And I thought it would be fun to read a very lighthearted all-ages DC book featuring a series of short stories about the Teen Titans living together and, you know, having their sandwiches go missing and getting into fights with monsters. Have you ever watched Teen Titans Go?
Not really.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's definitely cute. If you want a serious cartoon about superheroes, first of all, why? Second of all, you're not going to enjoy this. it's goofy fun, and there's only so many strips I can read of a comic that's just goofy fun. The first story in which someone steals Cyborg's sandwich, and it turns out to be a pizza demon that Raven left in the fridge. That was fun, but I didn't need to read much more beyond that. Great cover by Dan Hip.
Dan Hip is actually amazing.
Really cool cover.
Everything he does is great. He's been doing the covers for them for ages.
Cool. Yeah, real good stuff.
Did you not read Archie Batman 66 crossover?
Another one. I didn't make it far into this one either.
No, me neither. Oh, no, that's a lie. I read the whole fucking thing because I forced myself to really make sure that I hate Dan Parent's art as much as I think I do. And I do.
I like Dan Parent's art.
Why?
It's just like for the pages of like Batgirl on a bat bike. That shit's fun.
But he's gotten a lot better in the last couple of years. But his art's still so static and just trying to be like Archie House style, but in a way that's totally like devoid of personality. I'm so mean to Dan Parent, the poor man.
I think I think it works as a throwback, which is what he always does. I really liked his Your Pal Archie thing that he did with Ty Templeton.
Yeah.
My son was extremely excited because his name is Archie and he saw this and it was Archie and Batman together. And
Cute.
He was like, can you read this to me, Dad? And like, I made it like 3 pages in and he was like, can we read something else, please? So, I think it goes without saying, this does not appeal to a 4-year-old. However, it does appeal to a 74-year-old, I'm sure.
Yes, but no one else.
Written by Jeff Parker and Michael Moreci. Pencils by Dan Parent. Inks by Jay Bone. Colors by Kelly Fitzpatrick. That's a good team.
That's a good team. Yeah.
An excellent cover by the Allreds.
But I had the Frankavilla cover.
Mm. Oh, cool. Cool stuff. What do you want to talk about next? I've only got one more number one that I read.
Oh, God. But what was it?
It was Euthanauts number one.
All right. Let's talk about that.
This one came out through Black Crown, the IDW imprint, started by Shelley Bond. And this features Teenie Howard on writing. This is her next series after the very great Assassinistas that we loved. And it's called Euthanauts, and it features artwork by Nick Robles. Basically, it's about, a cancer patient in her last days, mm-hmm. is having one last meal with her family. A young woman at the table across from her is staring and kind of moaning about how could you, can you imagine just knowing that you're going to die soon and spending an uncomfortable amount of time paying attention to this poor dying woman. And then it turns out this woman is able to cast a spell on this young woman, and she binds them together. And
I think you read that when you were drunk. I don't think that's what happened in this comic.
Yeah, happens? Like she belts her over the head, and then.
But I like how you make it sound like the cancer patient is the main character of the book. The main character is the girl who's watching, who works at a funeral home and is really obsessed by death, follows the woman into the bathroom. They end up having a conversation, and then the cancer patient lady brains her in the head with her oxygen tank, takes her into some half-life weird space.
AKA a spell.
And then it's like they're going to be some kind of half-dead investigators or something. It sounds cool.
Bound together.
Anyway. This is really cool and weird and different, and, the designs are bizarre.
Yeah, definitely.
What if steampunk was good? I got in so much trouble for saying I hated steampunk at the last Queens of Kings.
Who likes steampunk? Besides 74-year-old people who enjoy Archie and Batman crossovers. Actually, no, that's not a 74-year-old thing. That's a very younger thing.
Yeah. It's
sorry 30s. To all our young steampunk listeners. this is a cool first issue for a series. I've never seen any of Nick Robles' art before, but I really liked it on this.
Really, paying attention to sort of style and aesthetics and, the visual language of the characters. Very good.
Awesome. Euthanauts, another good one for Black Crown.
Absolutely.
Jewel in the Black Crown.
Ha, ha, ha. Okay, I read three more number ones.
Mm-hmm.
So first one is Clan Killers, out by Aftershock, written by Sean Lewis, with art by Antonio Fuso. And Sean Lewis loves writing comics about Ireland, it seems. But I don't think he's Irish.
Sean?
Look, it's an Irish name, but he doesn't live in Ireland. And it's about a particularly grim time in, I assume, fictional Irish history, where there is an evil king who seems to have gone mad, and he's got three...
It's when U2 put their album on everyone's iTunes without asking.
The Darkest Hour. Anyway, and he's got three daughters, and one of them is like, my dad's crazy, I've got to behead the goddess Balor so that I can stop my dad murdering everyone all the time, because her dad just sits on a throne of skulls and kills everyone. And so she and her best friend, who's an orphan, who wants to escape the evil priests that he lives with, are going to bring some fire and damnation down onto the evil king. I really liked it.
Cool.
It's cool, it's weird, it's definitely very different. It's fairly, grim, and there's lots of Irish swears and, stuff like that. It's pretty, violent and sexually grim. But
they say feck.
They say feck. That's literally the first word in the whole comic.
Wow.
Feck. Yeah. First page, I was like, oh, here we go. Is it going to be Father Ted? No.
Feck your beliefs, my friend. Yeah. Great.
Good stuff. There's, nuns brandishing knives and stuff like that. I really enjoyed this. The colors are kind of funny. It's a little bit washed out, but I think it works for the sort of slightly made up historical time period. Yeah, I like this. It's got some fantasy elements, so you might not
Irish enjoy slash that fantasy. Much.
Your two, least favorite genre.
Two strikes.
I also read issue one of Aphrodite 5 from Top Cow imprint at Image Comics.
So I saw the Top Cow logo and I was like, nah, pass. And then I realized, yeah, Brian Hill is the writer on this. I should have read this.
Yep. Part. Brian Hill and Jeff Spokes on art. I've never heard of Jeff Spokes before, but I really like his stuff. It's slightly photo referencey, I suppose.
That's okay sometimes. Like,
but
you know,
the panel layouts are really interesting and I think he really nails a sort of grim future vibe with it. So the Aphrodite series has been going for a long time and I've never read any of it because Top Cow, and it always just seemed like another sexy assassins. But they do quite a good job of this being a really easy jumping on point and actually like a pretty compelling scary future world. And so the Aphrodites are a number of like sexy cyborg assassins.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bit where they explain like they have to be beautiful because their enemies underestimate beauty. Mm. All makes sense. And now she's coming back to kill her creators or something. And there's a sort of tech billionaire guy who's going to help her out. And so there is a bit of like, I'm sure there's stuff in this that you would enjoy more if you had more of a knowledge of the previous series. But I did enjoy this way more than I thought I would. Probably the most I've ever enjoyed a Top Cow book. And the colors are really good.
Yeah, it looks like the same colors you get on a Francavilla book.
Yeah, very sort of inky black, noir-y, cyberpunky future vibes.
Sweet.
Yeah, really cool. Liked it a lot. I'm going to keep reading that.
I'll have to catch up.
Last number one I read is The Mall issue one.
This looked really intriguing, but then yeah. I opened up the first page and it was like kind of by the numbers, crime. Someone gets called a Goomba.
Yeah. Look, it's pretty hilarious. So this is from Scout Comics. It's written by Don Handfield and James Hake III, illustrated by Rafael Loureiro. I don't know who any of those people are. Colored by Diho Lima. Mm-hmm. And so it starts off as a fairly like normal crime book and then really quickly switches into like an 80s teen movie. You're like, what in the fuck is going on? So you see this crime boss get killed and then you start following three very different teenagers around a sort of rich girl from an elite private school, a boy who is about to move to her private school on a football scholarship, and then a young Mexican boy who washes windows with his dad. And they all, we sort of see them interacting and, you know, getting beat up and blah, 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 blah. And they all have pretty, like, troubling, grim lives. They want to sort of escape in some sense. So they all then get letters from a mysterious scholarship.
Yep.
At the mall. A mall scholarship.
And so the best way to get a scholarship.
And so they all go to the mall before it opens, and some guy sits them down and is like, look, see this crime boss who just got killed in the first part of the book? He was all of your dad's. And he left you each a shop in the mall.
I feel so dumb for not reading this now. That's
really
amazing.
Yeah, it's really good.
But so what are the different shops they get? Like, does
one
someone get like a pretzel shop? And
one of them gets an organ shop. The Mexican boy gets an organ shop that sells like, you know, Wurlitzers. The girl gets a pet shop.
Yep.
And the football boy gets like a shoe shop, which hilariously he stole a pair of sneakers from earlier in the book. And he's like, I can't believe I stole from myself. anyway, and then it's sort of like, oh, and then in the end they accidentally also kill a crime guy.
Another crime boss who's actually their mother.
Anyway, I thought this was going to be really terrible, and then I fucking loved it. What a weird idea.
Well, okay.
What a bizarre concept.
I've got this in front of me. I'll read this tonight. This looks, it's so stupid.
Yeah, it's like the most like different thing that I've read in a hot minute, and I really enjoyed it.
Fantastic. Well, Siobhan, I also read something that you read last week, which is Konko and the Fudge.
Ah, cool. What do you think?
Number one. I loved this so much.
Yeah.
This is a local for us comic published out of Newcastle in Australia. Or are they Sydney based?
Newcastle, there's, I think.
There are ads for the Newcastle Pro Wrestling Foundation.
And the guy who illustrates it is a tattoo artist.
Right, cool. So, yeah, it's written by Goonie Tunes with art by Butch Mapper. I loved the art so much. Even when it starts out, I mean, this is about like an old-timey wrestler. In the opening kind of prologue, we see, which is set back in the olden times in 1921, we see him, challenge everyone in a crowd to an arm wrestle. No one can beat him. And then a girl beats him by distracting him with a kiss. This is all in black and white. And then when we hit the present day, there's a brilliant page where we just see the poor wrestler waiting for the love of his life on a tree stump. And then we see it cut to the future 20 years at a time. So it's like 1930s, 1950s, 1970s, 1990s, 2010s. And the panel is just cut into five strips down with our hero in the middle, still on his tree stump, getting covered in trees and snow. And you just see like slight changes over the years. And, this is a really great page to show the passing of time. When he wakes up, the circus is not what it used to be. And all of his circus friends are very excited that he's back to hopefully save the day. It was a really, really fun and simple premise with a great repeat of the kissing to distract your opponent joke at the end, which I absolutely adored.
Yep.
He kisses a bear, which is just the best. I loved this. I really hope we get more issues of this soon because I want to read all of them. Well done to everyone over at Gorilla Press.
They're hoping that issue 2 is going to hit the shelves in November.
Yep.
I'm going to be keeping in touch with them, so I will keep you guys all posted. But you can get copies of that at kingscomics.com.
Or you can check out gorillapress.com.au.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk a lot about how hard it is to get a comic published. And when we talk about that, we're talking about America. It's so much more trouble to do it here.
Yeah.
Where there's way less printing options and just not a scene comparatively at all. So cool for anyone to be doing things by themselves. Like, I know we talk about zines a lot, but to actually do like an issue of an ongoing comic series, it's a bold move that probably won't pay off. And so, if you are on the hunt for cool creators, if you often listen to Serious Issues and think, these guys always recommend books that we really like, or, if you just like comedy books, Konko and the Fudge, give it a shot. Try and track this down. I really, really like it. And tell the creators that you liked it as well, because those are the things that make up for the complete lack of money that they're going to be getting out of an investment in publishing their own comic.
Absolutely.
Konko and the Fudge, check it out. I'm really, really glad that it's on my radar because it's great. So that is it for the first issues of the last week. If you want to discuss any of the new series you picked up, please come over to our Facebook group, which you can find at facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast. Siobhan, Image put out like 12 issues of comics. So since they've got that's the biggest glut of comics I've got on my desk. Let's talk about Image.
Let's do it.
You want to pick the first thing?
Let's talk about the last issue of Dry County by Rich Tomasso.
Cool. Okay, Dry County by Rich Tomasso, who wrote and drew and colored and did everything on this book. We loved Spy Seal, which Tomasso's comic last year.
She-Wolf. I love She-Wolf as well.
Horror comic. And I read that other one that they re-released recently. I can't remember the
Clover,
name.
Clover Honey?
Yeah, that's the one. That was cool too. And this is definitely comparable to that. It's a kind of crime book featuring an absolutely hopeless main character whose name is Lou Rossi, who isn't really that likable and isn't really that good at being in a crime book. Like, he's just like, it's described on the cover as an everyman crime series, and that's exactly what Lou Rossi is. Just a bit of a
schmuck.
A bit of a schmuck, exactly. One thing about Rich Tomasso, which you might not know if you've only read Spy Seal, which definitely like kind of played into all the tropes that come with an anthropomorphic adventure series, is that he often does his crime books, at least, they build up and then don't really have the payoff that you would expect from a crime book.
Mm.
Or he, you know, he writes books in the genre where you don't necessarily get a payoff, which is definitely a trope when it comes to noir tales.
Yes, absolutely.
Which this is one. Yeah, this whole thing was about basically he's a cartoonist working in a newspaper that he doesn't like, and he meets a girl, falls in love, then she gets kidnapped. She has two dodgy ex-boyfriends, and he tries to rescue her, and he does so by leaving clues for her to read in his newspaper cartoon. There's a whole bunch of other weird shit going on in this world. I've compared it to the great Dan Clowes' book, Like a Velvet Glove Cast in Iron.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite as bizarre as that book gets, but tonally it felt very similar. And Tommaso's artwork is quite similar to Clowes's as well in parts. What did you think of the finale?
I loved it. I think it tied everything up really nicely. I like the sort of the how normal kind of it felt. Like, it wasn't a dramatic ending. You just kind of discovered all the answers and saw his life gets a little bit worse, but not that much worse. And he doesn't get the love of his life, but that's all right. He's going to fucking keep on trucking because life goes on.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't like a Brubaker book where, like, he's, you know, dead and narrating his own, like, murder at the end of the book.
Exactly, yeah. It reminded me a lot of, like trashy crime novels that I would sort of devour as a teenager. And, you know, when it's like, I feel like we could get so many more Lou Rossi stories.
Yeah, this is hapless pizza guy.
And I would read them forever. I love it.
Yep, really, really great. And, you know, we bring up comparisons to trashy writing, and it definitely isn't trashy writing, but what really makes this book excel is both the art and the overall design of the book, the panel layouts, the creativity with the text and just like little things that you don't expect from your comic book. This goes above and beyond in that regard, and this will make a really, really beautiful trade, hopefully in hardcover when it comes out too.
Yeah, I'd love to see oversized.
Well, I was going to say undersized. Like a little
paperback or something?
Yeah. Like the same way, the same size that... what's his name? My favorite guy in the world, the guy who did the Parker books. The best.
Oh,
my
God.
Favorite cartoonist. What's wrong with me? Why can't
Darwin Cook.
Darwin Cook. It's because I said Dan Clowes,
yeah,
and that's another DC name, and I kept saying Darwin Clowes, Daniel Cook. I don't know. It was Parker books. I'd love it in the same format as that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Another Image series that ended this week was Infidel. The fifth issue of this, which was fucking brutal.
Yes.
This
is the opposite. This is like everyone dies.
Yeah, totally. So this was created by Pornsack Pichichote?
God, we should just look up how to pronounce his
name. Or just call him. Hey, man, how do you say your name? Thank you.
Cheers.
Sincerely, the two whitest people who talk... Oh, no, not even. We're not even fucking close. Aaron Campbell, the other co-creator, colors by Jose Villarubia. And this is a very modern take on the horror genre, which I really appreciated. It's a very different book to what I would normally read. Gave me some feelings of like 90s Vertigo, but just in tone, not in style or delivery in any way at all.
Yeah.
It was basically like, it's about a ghost or a demon that only people of color can see.
And that is haunting a specific building. And sort of almost framing people for crimes.
Hate horrible crimes.
Yeah. Violent terrorism. Crimes.
Yeah.
And
it played on a lot on how we kind of judge people for looking a certain way even if we're trying not to, the kind of things that we expect of certain types of people.
Like all great horror, it makes a monster out of the things that we're sort of afraid of.
Exactly. As well as the main character's fears of all the other people around them too.
Mm-hmm.
Look, it was a really unsettling book throughout, but I really, really rewarding.
Absolutely.
Read, I thought.
Really, really affecting, genuinely affecting. It's such a devastating end. She loses everything. And it's pure horror in that sense. And it's I love this book. I'm going to be recommending this to everyone, especially come Halloween. This is going to be my go-to scary book that everyone should read.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's keep things scary for a moment. Again,
yes,
everyone check out Infidel if you want to be kept up all night and thinking about things you don't necessarily want to think about, but you're okay thinking about them. Another great horror book that comes out every couple months is through Image's Ice Cream Man. And this week,
man,
I reckon we got the best issue so far. This is a book written by W. Maxwell Prince with art by Martin Marazzo, who is quickly becoming one of my favorites.
Same.
Colors by Chris O'Halloran. Ice Cream Man is a really, really dark, but like grim, like black comedy almost, horror book, kind of like a Twilight Zone book where, you know, it's like every issue is a new one shot featuring a different scenario where a whole bunch of horrible shit happens to their characters. And the main character, the Ice Cream Man, shows up at some point. Sometimes he gives them an ice cream, which turns out to be something else. Other times he's just kind of in the background. Other times he's wielding a shotgun.
Was he in this one at all?
Yeah, he shows up at the very end.
Oh, I didn't realize that was him.
That's our boy, the Ice Cream Man. Except this time he's just a cowboy.
Yeah, okay, there you go. That's why I was confused. And this is just a whole issue of a man jumping off a building and sort of thinking about his life as it happens while all this really intensely horrifying shit happens in the building.
To one of his poor workers.
Everyone gets eaten by vultures.
He's just trying to escape. Yeah. It's a horrific stuff, but they're like quite nonchalant about being eaten by vultures at this big boardroom, which, you know, their boss also plummets out the window. Or he jumps off the roof and then kind of falls past them. The whole thing is narrated by this man plummeting to his death. And look, I make fun of a lot of heavily narrated comics. I'm going to be doing so when I talk about Thor this week, and how it couldn't, you know, it really takes away from my enjoyment of comics sometimes. And so I laughed very, very heartily at the end of this book where, you know, the whole time it's being narrated by this guy plummeting to his death and talking about his life as we see all these other things happen in the book. And at no point did it actually annoy me, but he starts, you know, wrapping up the story, and then the Ice Cream Man just says, "Shut up, will ya?"
Yeah.
And the narration stops.
Yeah, fucking amazing issue. This series
comics,
is so good.
Yeah, so good. Excellent art, great colors, and a really, really unique idea for a series that I don't think ever could outstay its welcome just because of the creativity of the creators involved.
Yeah, just keep going. I wish they'd bring back their art crime series as well.
That was great. It would probably
The Electric Sublime.
That's it. We'll probably have a better home and image too.
I think so.
Buy that shit, Image.
Should we say spooky and talk about Gideon Falls, issue 5?
Yep, cool. Definitely.
Written by Jeff Lemire with art by Andrea Sorrentino and Dave Stewart on colors. This is the Spooky Black Barn book. Spooky Black Barn. Horror, psychological horror, but also a literal, physical, scary black barn.
Which shows up and crushes people, we learn in this issue.
And then steals them and takes them away. What in the fuckity fuck? Horrible.
So unique. And also unique layouts from Sorrentino. Just really just letting loose with so many creative ideas throughout the comic. Really playing with, almost like psychological layouts.
Yeah.
Like everything, some panels are just like this mind map of ideas.
Yep.
Really, really great, unique stuff.
And so we're following two sort of different stories. A priest who's moved into a new town where there's a sort of secret society who are obsessed with discovering the Black Barn, which appeared years ago and took the son of one of the society members. And then we're also following a young man named Norton who sees the Black Barn and collects garbage to try and rebuild the Black Barn or something. But now his psychologist has also started seeing the Black Barn and she's quite scared.
Yeah, and is now turning to him for help, which is a fun little twist because she just feels so helpless in this situation.
And at the end of this issue, we see our hero priest running head foot. Well, he's the protagonist priest. running straight into spooky barn land. I love this.
Yeah, very, very unsettling book.
Yeah,
real good.
Real good. Jeff Lemire is such a I know, like, we don't even need to see it, say it, but, like, I think I read two Jeff Lemire books this week, and they're totally different and totally incredible, and yeah.
Yeah, he also did the variant cover of Infidel that I got this week too, which is really, really good.
And he did the art on Royal City as well, issue 12.
Which he wrote too. Royal City issue 12 is his very, very personal series about a family in America who lost their youngest member when he was a teenager. And at the start of this series, they all see their lost family member at different stages of his life in visions, I guess. So they all have like imaginary friends who take different aged forms of their lost sibling son. This current arc has been all about going back into the past and telling us how he died. And it's really tragic, but we also get the news that before he died, he fathered a child. And so this child has, she's made her way, you know, obviously she's a teenager now, probably older than her father was when he died. And she has kind of made her way into the Pike family. And this is how this series is going to wrap up, I guess. There's like two or three issues left.
And it's been a very, very emotional, grounded ride. And it's like, for me, in terms of his sort of stuff that he's done all by himself, so like Sweet Tooth and some of his graphic novels, this is
Essex County.
Probably one of my favorites. It's so personal and so emotional, and the art's so gorgeous, and the way that he balances all the characters is so sophisticated. I just really love it.
Have you read Essex County?
No, I need to.
That's my favorite Lemire book.
Yeah, everyone says that.
And this is very in line with that. I'm trying to remember what that awesome one he put out, that graphic novel last year that we loved.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Somewhere, whatever the fuck that was called, that was great too.
About the retired hockey player.
Roughneck.
Yes, that's a good book, everyone.
That's a great book too. Yeah, weirdly, I think Sweet Tooth is like my least favorite of all those, and I loved that.
Oh, but, I love Sweet Tooth.
Yeah, well, there you go. Royal City, it's great, an excellent cover this week too.
Very, very good
cover. Yeah, and I like the, he has a habit of ending things on quite a morbid note. It looks like that's where Descender, his image book, is going to end up. But I like that we've got this, you know, moment of hope and positivity entering our quite depressing family's lives at the end of this series.
Absolutely.
So we've got a whole bunch more Image books.
Yeah.
Before we get into the relatively newer series that have started, I just want to talk about issue 38 of East of West. Written by Jonathan Hickman with art by Nick Dragota and Frank Martin on colors. And man, like, you know, when I'm, even though you've not read this series, I know you can definitely know what I'm talking about when, Hickman, throughout his Avengers run, his Fantastic Four run, and his various creator-owned stuff, there will be those issues where you're like, okay, he's just setting up stuff for the future. I'm enjoying this, but like, this was not my favorite issue this week. But then when all the pieces line up and you have just like this exceptional action comic, mm-hmm. with like brilliant dialogue and all these, you know, years and years of payoff happening, this was one of those issues.
Amazing.
I just don't think comics get better than that.
He's so good.
He's so good. But yeah, that's like, and that's his specialty, you know? It's like just building, and then crumbling.
Yes, please. Who does the art on that book?
Nick Dragota. It's awesome. I fucking love this book. And actually, the colors have never looked better than on this issue. I'm not sure why. Maybe it was a different kind of tone issue than what we normally get. But there's so many pawns in this insane kind of post-apocalyptic-esque kind of, not even post-apocalyptic, basically like the America has been divvied up into different nations and all those nations are at war. And so too are the, like, you know, the Knights of the Apocalypse, Pestilence and War, and all those guys are in the mix too. And then there's all this just fantastic, massive, legendary figures that are kind of playing the game too. And in this issue, there's someone who's making his way through various characters who have wronged either him or the nation and is taking them out one by one.
Hell yeah.
It's fucking great. It's so good. And they all speak in just like enormous, Hickmanisms, which yes, I please. Love so much. highly recommend East of West. You know, we're not far away from the next this final trade, and that would be an amazing binge for somebody to do.
Yeah, absolutely. One day I'll do it.
So we got a whole bunch of new Image series recently,
mm-hmm.
and I've got some second, third, and fourth issues in front of me now.
Mm-hmm.
Should we talk about Flavor?
Let's do it.
Because this was one of the best of them.
Yeah.
Flavor issue 3 by Joseph Keating with art by Wook Jin Clark, colors by Tamara Bonvillain. This is a book in which basically like the world is obsessed with food, but you have to have a chef's license to cook it legally.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's like an underground food like games, like Hunger Games-esque thing, where if you want like exotic ingredients to make your restaurants stand out, you have to like basically enter a an Iron Chef cook-off with someone where the stakes are you could lose your life
or a hand.
Well, no, he loses his hands in that he now has to wash dishes for the guy he lost to for the rest of his life.
Yeah, but the guy he lost to has no hand.
Oh fuck. So you can also lose your hands.
Yeah.
But yeah,
to our main character is just
trying to help her family business succeed.
Because her parents are sick.
Yep. And it looks like even though she makes a mean crepe Suzette, nothing's going to go well for her very soon.
And we're also simultaneously following the story of a young man who appears to be like the son of the president or something like that, who has just started at the Culinary Institute where you're supposed to go to get qualified, but doesn't seem very confident or seem to be enjoying himself. And they're connected, but we don't know why yet. It's just like such a sort of gorgeous, magical food world.
Definitely. It could be a Miyazaki movie.
Exactly.
They have so many unexplained weird things, like the ringmaster of the food games wears like a pigeon mask.
Yeah.
With just his kind of eyes poking out. It's really, really great stuff. And this is also a book with a food consultant.
Yes.
Ali Bouzari, who writes a kind of essay at the back about food that vaguely links to the story. It's really, really good.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. This is a really lovely book, and it's a really lovely one to get in single as well.
Yes, definitely agree. So that's Flavor. Highly enjoy that. I also really loved the fourth issue of Skyward this week. The deceptively simple concept of what if Earth gravity turned off,
mm-hmm.
Is the kind of prospect for Skyward's plot. It's written by Joe Henderson with art by Lee Garbett and colors by Antonio Fabela, and follows the life of a daughter who lost her mother when the gravity turned off, and her father, who thinks he can fix the gravity problem for all the world, is terrified of leaving his house and being in a place with no roof and no gravity. And there's like we're learning more about the world in which organized crime and kind of like the 1% is people that kind of invented weird magnet technology, mm-hmm. so people can continue to live the way they used to, but others have kind of embraced the lack of gravity and used it to get around faster, and it's really, really unique. It's building up quite a big kind of action plot, every now and then we'll throw something really insane at you, like this is the first time we see a storm.
Yes.
In this, and the storm is basically a big bubble of water that heads towards all the buildings and stuff. Pretty awesome.
So good. Yeah. I the first issue I was like, yeah, all right. Cool, I guess. The sort of ideas they're managing to use, or sorry, the way they're using the basic concept is so interesting and so fun. And so clever, and the colours are so gorgeous, and the characters feel so well-rounded, and yeah, I love it.
Same. It's awesome.
Really good.
Such good stuff. Do you want to talk about The Weatherman issue 2?
Yeah.
Jodie LaHoop, Nathan Fox, and Dave Stewart.
Oh, sorry. this is a weird book. So in the last issue, we find, we see that everyone on Earth died or something for some reason.
A whole
reason.
Bunch of people died
and
on Earth.
Now everyone lives on Mars.
Yep.
And it was all one dude's fault. And we see our hero is a weatherman who is sort of beloved by everyone because he's such a goofball. Loves his dog, loves his life. And then he is attacked, his dog gets killed, and he's taken in because apparently he killed everyone on Earth. but he has no memory of it.
Because the theory is that the terrorist responsible for killing half the Earth, then had all of his memories wiped and became a new person. And a special, you know, secret government force thinks it's this weatherman. And so they shoot his dog's face off. Mm. And there were way too many panels of this dog with half a face.
No in, good.
In this issue. But this really feels like, to me, a book by the guy, Simon Spurrier.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's an enormous concept with like 10 million things all happening at once and new things for you to remember. So it's going to be a difficult one to read issue to issue.
But the art's very dynamic.
That's true.
And the color.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Those are great. And I do think the concept is interesting.
I'm going to try and stick with it as long as I can. But yeah, there were moments where I was like, wait, who is that again? What happened? I can't remember. I've also got the fourth issue of Analog.
Yes, please.
By Jerry Duggan. They don't write the actual full names of them. So it's Duggan, O'Sullivan, Spicer, and Sabino, the creative team on this one. And this is...
I have trouble following this one. I like it, but I can't remember what it's about.
Well, so this is this almost gave me an exit point. The story didn't so much as wrap up, but it does provide an exit point if you don't want to really read any more of this.
Yeah.
And because of how confusing it is to kind of remember, basically the world, everyone's internet information went public, mm-hmm. and thus no one trusts the internet anymore. So they either allow everyone to see every single moment of their life and embrace that lifestyle, or they live completely off the grid. And important information is shared the analog way. In that there are people kind of like carting information from one person to another via a suitcase, and that is what our main character does. He's an expert. He's also one of the people responsible for
turning the internet off.
That's right, to begin with, and unveiling everything that everyone stored on, all the secrets they stored on there. So he kind of has that in his past. This issue saw him taken to Japan, where he meets a series of AI robots and animals and children, and it really kind of took me out of what this book has tried to do before this. I kind of liked that it was like, it's the future, but the only thing here is that they don't use the internet anymore.
Yeah,
and beyond that, it's still how your life normally is set in our regular time. I'm not sure if I liked that change. I don't think it was bad. It was just not what I wanted from this book.
I still like this, though. The art's so cool, and I think that they're sort of dealing with interesting ideas in cool ways. And I liked the sort of weird artificial intelligence menagerie that's being sort of babied by these scientists.
Yeah.
Interesting.
If it's a quieter week than this week, I'll pick up the fifth issue of Analog, but I'm kind of happy to tap out now. I feel like there's not much left up in the air.
Yeah.
The Magic Order is the Mark Millar book that I read the first issue of, with art by Oliver Coypel. And I was like, maybe I'll give the second issue a shot. And then the first thing is, this is all about magicians, and like they're like magicians who are in organized crime. The first bit of dialogue in the second issue is our escape artist, and she says, "I guess I've been an escapologist since I escaped my own abortion."
And the one whose character design looks totally ripped off from Rowan from Black Magic?
Yes, definitely. So we have her like transferring herself and her placenta
as
an unborn child into the midwife's stomach, and yeah, very fucking weird.
If I could pay Mark Millar to never reference like abortions or like rape, anything in his comics anymore,
both are in this one, I think
I would be so pleased. So pleased.
There's always cool ideas in these comics, but then there's just so many things that just make me go, ugh. But yeah, just, this is one of those things where it just...
They're cool ideas, like a, but then he executes them and his voice is like horrible.
Lots of people die in this issue. Like, I don't think he's... He tries to cram what most writers would do over 30 issues into 6 now. That's just his thing now, that perfect, like, you know, feature movie format.
Just trying to sell shit to Netflix makes me... I'm just so like, fuck, like, don't bother with comics then. Just don't bother. Totally. Just write scripts and sell them to Netflix. Stop flooding us with your toxic bullshit.
So yeah, I want to
leave us alone.
Magic Order. Leave me alone, Mark. Let's talk about Marvel next, because they also
wait. Hang on, I have two more Image
what
books.
What the fart?
Okay, I read issue 2 of Proxima Centauri by Farrell Dalrymple. Of Pop Gun War fame, and this is the most, I would say, linear Farrell Dalrymple book I've ever read, narrative wise, and it's still confusing and all over the place, but we have a sort of really obnoxious teen sort of science-y astronaut hero kid, but I fucking love him because he's just horrible, just like a horrible proper teen, like fuck you, you're a dick all the time. It's great. Oh god, I felt like I understood what happened in this, but it's really hard to understand. He's trying to find his brother is the key thing, and then all kinds of crazy Farrell Dalrymple style sciencey magic stuff happens, and it's so gorgeous and so bizarre and so confusing, but worth it, worth every page, every penny. It's like, it is like proper art, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Wow, cool.
But also fun and full of teenagers that swear and hate each other. I love it.
Awesome.
And then I also read issue 2 of Stella by Joseph Keating and Brett Blevins, your alter ego, Brett Blevins, who I didn't know but is like a really old artist, and he does a really sort of touching, heartfelt essay in the back because he's been working on this book for like 4 or 5 years, he said, after his wife died of cancer. And so this is a sort of superhero sci-fi story. A young woman whose name is Stella is now fighting her former teammates because they might be evil or she might be evil. But it's all sort of like, we don't know all of the backstory just yet, and they're building it all up. We see kids being... drafted into this war and being given superpowers, and it looks as if it's driven some of them mad. But this is some of the most gorgeous sci-fi, sort of almost like European, like a British 2000 AD style, crazy, gorgeous Barbarella fantasy sci-fi, and I just think it's like gorgeous and brilliant, and I think everyone should read it.
Yeah, cool. Damn, I don't remember really connecting with the first issue that much.
The second issue, I enjoyed a lot more, I have to say.
Okay, cool. Good to know.
Yeah, I think it's worth it. I think it's worth tracking down.
There you go.
Anyway,
Stella,
that's all my...
Issue number 2.
All the Image books I read.
Right. That's an insane amount of Image books.
I know.
So we've got a somewhat insane amount of Marvel books to get through too now, but we're going to start off with a really good, like one of the best, and then finish on one of the best too, and with some okay ones.
Yes, please.
The Immortal Hulk, number 3. This is a series that when it was pitched, I was like, oh, that sounds like a cool idea. And I really like Al Ewing, but I've never really read his take on Hulk before, or mm-hmm. like a horror book, which he says that this book is going to be. So, you know, who knows what this is going to be like. This is like the top of my stack every time it comes out now. And we're only three issues in. So usually this has just one artist in Joe Bennett. But in this issue, we see the same event told from different points of view, which is one of my favorite things for comic books to do. There was a great Batman Legends of the Dark Knight issue that Garth Ennis wrote that was written from different points of view, and depending on how old they were, they saw a different kind of Batman. One of my favorite one-shots. And this, written by Al Ewing, with the framing sequence by Joe Bennett. We then see Leonardo Romero, Paul Hornschmeyer, who is extremely unique, kind of like, you know, underground comic style, and it was so good to see him show up in a Marvel book. We had Marguerite Savage again this week, doing great stuff, and then Gary Brown as well, and colors by Paul Mounts. We see a Hulk incident all told from different points of view, from people that see Hulk as a hero, from people that see Hulk as a monster. Basically, this whole book, every issue is Bruce Banner using his Hulk powers to stop people suffering at the hands of someone else who's been affected by gamma radiation. And in this instance, it's someone called Hotshot, who calls himself the Human Ray Gun.
So good. But also, this was so clever because it sort of also charts like all these different ages of comic books. So it's kind of this like awesome rundown of comic book history as well, in a sense. It's like a golden age superhero book, and then it's like a 70s or 80s underground comic, and then it seems to be like a romance comic, and then it's a sort of Vertigo-esque horror comic as well, all in one. What more could you fucking want, people, in a Marvel book?
And I know. This is so, so great. And this is like, you know, When I say things like these are the, I mean, I know that DC gave us the Young Animal imprint, but Marvel just give it to us as an experiment. Oh, you've lost me?
No, there we go. I got it back.
Cool.
All right, but I missed all of that.
I was just saying that, like, I know DC have given us, you know, experimental comics that sometimes feature their beloved characters through their Young Animal imprint, but I love that Marvel will take a chance and just do this in regular continuity.
Yes.
With a highly experimental book.
Yes.
Like this one.
I love it.
It's just so different and so rewarding, but it doesn't feel like it betrays any of the comics featuring this character before it. Like, it's
this also perfect. Feels to me like the Hulk comic I've been waiting my entire life to read. Like, I've never really enjoyed Hulk comics because it's always like, oh, Hulk gets blown into space, or Hulk fucking blah blah blah, whatever. I don't really care. I want to see, like, I've always just wanted a straight up Hulk horror comic, and this is giving me everything that I've wanted, including,
and I love that it's Bruce literally wielding the Hulk as a weapon, as opposed to, like, you know, regretfully unleashing it to help people.
Yes. And not a hero, not a superhero, you know.
No, it's fucking great.
It's very, very clever, and the Alex Ross covers are gorgeous. Like, it's worth collecting in single just for those alone.
Yeah, and so then it looks like the guy who is the Wendigo.
Yes.
Is what's his name?
Walter Wendigo.
Walter Lankowski is going to. Like, we are seeing like threads of either this is just going to be what the next issue is about, or this is going to be like an ongoing plot for this series. Either or, I'm excited.
But I'm into it.
This is just a really great comic.
So good.
So good. Check it out, everyone. The Immortal Hulk. So Thor, issue number 3, written by Jason Aaron with art by Mike Del Mundo. I have loved almost every issue of Jason Aaron's now long and legendary Thor run. And I have to say, this might be the least I've enjoyed it.
I've probably enjoyed this issue the most since the renumbering.
Yeah, well, issue 3 of 3. Yeah, sure. But I this was definitely a stronger issue than the last two. But I don't know what it is about it. I think it might be that it's entirely narrated by Thor. So there is that telling more than showing. And it is, you know, written in Thor's often funny but can be quite laborious, you know.
Thor talk.
Shakespearean Thor talk. I don't know. I wonder if it is that, like, I love Mike Del Mundo's artwork, but it's not particularly dynamic in parts. And
it's also sometimes a bit hard to read.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. I wish I loved this as much as I loved everything that came before it, and I'm sure I will at some point.
Yeah. For me, I enjoyed this because this felt like a really pure, fun, silly Thor story to me. Like, it sort of is like really crazy, high stakes, big, weird space stuff, but then it's got all these like silly jokes, and it just feels like a Thor's on an adventure. And also it ends with the wedding being interrupted by Thanos.
Yeah.
And says Thanos would like a word with the groom. Yes, please. Yet that's how I would like all comics marriage to end. Yet another. I understand your criticisms.
I'm not saying I don't enjoy it. I just like think I like they were, that was my favorite comic when Russell Dauterman was on it.
Yeah. I enjoyed this issue the most out of a Thor issue I've enjoyed in a while, I have to say. More than the ending of the Jane Foster stuff. Just kill her already.
Yeah. then she'd just show up in this arc.
Yeah, I know. But I liked Thor convincing Loki to kill him so that he could enter Valhalla and get more warriors for their war. Clever, yeah. Funny. I liked it.
Yeah, that's clever. The payoff of this arc is going to be really good.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just this arc for me, this issue was good as opposed to my favorite.
I think it was great. Good. I disagree.
So now let's talk about the second issue of Tony Stark Iron Man, which is Dan Slott taking over the Iron Man series.
I didn't read it. Just don't care. I just hate. Yeah. I hate the character. I don't understand why I'm supposed to find him like empathetic or appealing or anything. I'm just like, oh God, kill him already.
He's brought back. Like, he's very much like, this is Tony Stark, the playboy. And it is.
Oh, that sounds cool.
What do you want? Do you want him to be, like, morose and morbid?
No, I don't want him. I don't like him. I don't like him at any stage. I don't like him as an alcoholic. I don't like him as a recovered alcoholic. I don't like him as a playboy. I don't like him married. I don't like him in any sense. Fuck him. Wow. Get rid of him.
Not even, like, on, like, a team book?
No, he's like Elon Musk. No, thank you. No, thank you. Do you want to read Elon Musk, the comic book? No.
Oh, actually, Iron Man starts dating Grime. Yeah. In this issue. And then he called Rhodey a pedo.
See, this is why I don't want to read it. Terrible, terrible.
That didn't happen. This issue was a marked improvement on that first issue, which was, you know, kind of like a big, fun kind of status quo change up one shot. This one sets the wheels in motion for what this plot is going to be about, but it's very much, it feels a very simple, similar to what Slott was doing with the Peter Parker industry stuff. It's a lot about the workplace, and I didn't really like that much in the Spider-Man run.
Yeah.
But I like War Machine a lot. I think James Rhodes is one of the better characters in the Iron Man.
It's just a funny sentence. I like War Machine a lot.
But he's good in this. He's recently returned to life, and he admits to Tony in this mid battle that he's become claustrophobic and scared of his suit. And so he steals a much roomier suit from a would be villain. But then there's some, like, there's a lot of other weird stuff going on with like AI, which I don't think is as interesting as Slott hopes it would be, but maybe it will be. I don't know. I'm going to give it a bit more of a shot just because I came to regret not reading all of his Spidey run. I'm sure this will at some point slot into place. Hey,
all right.
But yeah, I'm not enjoying this as much as Bendis's Iron Man at this point, which is really saying something.
Hilarious.
X-Men Red, written by Tom Taylor, with Carmen Carnero on art and Rain Barreto on colors. This is Jean Grey's team, a character that I previously would have said, hey, I don't care about this character one bit, but I like her now. I think she's pretty good on this, in this book. We've also got Nightcrawler, Namor, Trinary, Wolverine, Gentle, Storm, Honey Badger, and Gambit on the team. A pretty fun team. And their main antagonist is Cassandra...
Nova.
Nova, from Grant Morrison's new X-Men run, who is basically encouraging rulers all over the world to give everybody these drugs that make them... or like these nanobites or whatever that make them automatically hate and want to kill mutants.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, pretty classic X-Men kind of premise, but told with a very different team and with pretty fun writing by Tom Taylor.
Yeah, it's a, for me, it's a pretty like Paint by Numbers X-Men team book, but yeah. it's my favorite of the X books.
Yeah, definitely. I think X-Men is good when it's Paint by Numbers sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
It just is. It's a comfort food book.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
With moments of fun and brilliance, but mostly just comfort food.
Yeah.
Are you still reading Infinity Countdown?
Okay. Yes. What? I hate this. When does it end?
I know. Well, so Infinity Countdown is over with this issue, but then we have Infinity Wars Prime number one coming out this week. And then the actual event continues with Infinity Wars. I don't know why they've stretched this out so much. It makes no sense that there isn't just a Guardians of the Galaxy book, and instead we have this ridiculous, long, never-ending event. But it's written by Jerry Duggan, who I still think is doing good work. I just think the publishing schedule makes no sense.
Yeah.
Aaron Kuda and Mike Hawthorne on art. Inks by Aaron Kuda and Jose Marzan Jr. Colors by Jordi Belair. Various people all around the universe have the Infinity Stones, from Doctor Strange and Black Widow and Turk Barrett in New York City. And then Star-Lord and Drax and Adam Warlock. And then I think Ultron / Hank Pym has the other... Oh, no, I can't remember who's got the other one. It's written here somewhere. Captain Marvel has the other one.
Yeah.
And so basically at the end of this issue, all you need to know is that Doctor Strange, using the stone that he has, he calls out to all the people who hold a stone and tells them to come and meet him at Central Park for a meeting where they can discuss making sure they keep the stones out of Thanos' hands.
Seems safe bringing them all to one place.
In New York, where nothing bad ever happens.
It's a good call, Doc.
Loki's on the front cover of the next issue, so he must have a part to play in this event too.
God, I just don't care.
Are you going to continue reading it?
Probably, because I hate myself.
there's moments of goodness in it, but I don't understand the choice to have it published in the way they're doing it.
No. I mean, they just want to try and make fucking money.
That's true. Tie into Infinity War. Avengers this week, written by Jason Aaron, with art by Ed McGuinness and Paco Medina. Issue number 5 came out this week. We've also got inks by Juan Velasco, Mark Morales, and Carl Story, and colors by David Curiel. Still reading this, waiting for it to get its hooks in me. Yet to do so. It's not a bad comic. It just is nowhere near as good as as what my brain thought an Avengers book written by Jason Aaron would be.
Same. Nate, my lovely boyfriend Nate, kept shouting at me when I was reading it because he's like, "You're reading it too slow. Read it faster. Don't read the words. Just look at the pictures." And you know what? That's actually a much better way to read the issue. If you just are like, Ed McGuinness, la 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 la. It's actually a much more compelling book. And in the end, they're all giant like mechs for some reason.
Yeah, totally.
Great. So
yeah, Ghost Rider is now piloting this old celestial being. Thor is giant and She-Hulk is
She-Hulk
giant
because
they took some weird elixir and Tony has made an enormous mech. So it's them versus the enormous Sentinels. So at least the final issue of this is going to be big and stupid.
But, you know, I'd like a bit more. I know that we just talked about how we don't want, you don't like Iron Man being so office-based, but I'd like a bit more like, oh, the Avengers all live in one building and they have to go and get breakfast. That's my favorite shit. Come on. Give him a house again.
What about a butler? You're anti-butler, right?
I am anti-butler because of class issues.
I read Star Wars Darth Vader Annual, issue number 2, or the annual number 2, written by Chuck Wendig with great pencils by Leonard Kirk. It was cool to see him show up on this book. He previously did a bunch of Tom Taylor's Wolverine run. Walden Wong and Scott Hanna on inks and Nolan Woodard on colors. Again, another Tom Taylor collaborator. Mm-hmm. This was interesting in that it had lots of different characters from the Star Wars Rogue One movie. The Ursos were in this, Commander Krennic, Governor Tarkin were all in this. And I don't know if the story was that interesting, but it was just cool seeing those characters show up in another piece of media. That had a Star Wars logo on it. Like, it wasn't... Yeah. I don't know. Whatever.
Cool.
I was like, I don't know if I'm going to enjoy this annual. And I was like, oh, cool. They're in it. All right. That's it. Certainly were in it.
That tricked me into enjoyment.
There was a lot of shit in it that I didn't like, but I did like that. So if you are a big fan of Rogue One, I don't know if I'm in the minority or not. I really liked Rogue One. Did you see it?
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
Grim.
But this was kind of, it was fun seeing them kind of, people play with the characters that were introduced in that.
Yeah.
There you go. Final Marvel book for me, unless you've got one more. Great.
Final
Runaways.
One. Yay.
Guess what, everybody? Runaways. I loved Runaways.
In a shocking turn of events, it's the best Marvel book of the week again, every week that it comes out.
Rainbow Rahl on writing, Chris Anker on art, and Matthew Wilson on colours make issue 11 of Runaways an absolute joy from cover to cover.
It's the makeover issue.
So Gert, who has, in the entirety of her life, be it alive or dead, has always had purple hair.
As a rebellion, specifically as a rebellion.
And there's a brilliant moment where she escapes her kind of, you know, motley crew of runaways and goes out into the wild. And sees that everyone else has purple hair like she does. And it's no longer an act of rebellion that she thought it once was. So the kind of big moment in this, you know, would-be superhero book is that she dyes her hair brown.
Yeah, and starts curling it and gets a new outfit. Fucking yes, please.
But like,
But we also see Victor get a makeover. And we, like, that was a great character moment for him where Doombot brings him a new body, but it's like a weapon body. And Victor's like, me, I don't like it. Anyway, that was fucking so good.
We're so blessed to have this book exist.
Yes.
I'm going to be absolutely mortified if it ever gets cancelled. Because it is, I think I enjoy this more than the Brian K. Vaughan original Runaway series, which I previously said was probably my favorite Marvel book.
Chris Anker is just so fucking good.
Yeah. That has a big part to do with it. I love how this series is just allowing it to be a book about runaways who happen to have powers, and every issue allows, you know, one or two of each of them to have these very, very personal, massive moments that aren't fighting. You know, there's been such little action in, throughout this, but it's not boring ever.
And we also get to see what happened to another runaway from a previous run, Clara.
The Joss Whedon run, which, have you ever read that, the 6 issues he did?
No.
They go back in time and rescue, like, a slave girl. It's not very good. I like that they didn't ignore all the previous lore.
Yeah.
And, so we see what happens to her, why she's not on the team anymore. Clara is her name. Don't read the Joss Whedon run, everybody.
Just read this.
Oh, there's one good moment with the Punisher in his run. It's pretty fun.
Oh, yeah?
Molly, like, kicks the Punisher in the balls or something. Pretty funny.
Nice.
Let's talk about DC books now. I've got a small handful.
Yep.
Hilariously, when I asked Siobhan before we recorded the episode to pick any comic from her pile to hold up, she picked up Batman 51, a comic which she sledged the previous issue of, for good reason.
Absolutely.
But this is Tom King, continuing his Batman run, which he apparently plans to do until issue 100. So we are just past the halfway point.
Or someone kills him first.
Don't say that. Don't even joke
about
that.
I know.
He has to have guards at Comic-Con.
I know.
I was ready to tap out after issue 50, and then I saw that the preview for this issue had him returning with artist Lee Weeks.
With colours by Elizabeth Breitweiser.
Yep, and that is how you keep me reading your book.
Same. That is how you get me to give a good review of Batman 51, because I loved this issue.
Yeah, okay. So that go on, a tell good me that. Issue. Tell me why you loved it. I did not see that coming at all.
Because it's a fucking courtroom drama about Mr. Freeze and Batman going too far because he's sad because Catwoman left him. And it's unbelievably beautifully illustrated. Beautifully illustrated. And not everything's 9 panels, and it's not ultra depressing and grim about fucking PTSD, and at some point Batman rips a urinal off the wall and throws it.
His greatest ex-rival, the urinal. It's the Batman versus urinal issue we've all been waiting for.
But I don't think I've ever read a Batman story where Bruce Wayne kind of tricks his way onto a jury to be able to defend Victor Freeze, because he knows that Batman unjustly caught him. Like, it wasn't Victor Freeze's fault. He was just angry because Catwoman left him. Anyway, I thought this was a good issue.
Yeah, me too.
Trying to be contrary, but I did really enjoy it.
I especially loved the artwork. The title page where you have Bruce and all the other members of the jury. We see a bird's eye view of their meeting, and it's just an unbelievable double spread. Of course, there's some great action moments throughout it. Colors by Elizabeth Breitwiser are off the charts, but man, this is a beautiful looking issue of Batman.
Yeah. Lee Weeks is one of my all-time perfect Batman artists.
Yeah, well, I mean, considering he only recently started drawing him, like it's insane for him to be like this god tier Batman artist.
And what a Bruce Wayne he draws as well.
Yeah, definitely. If you haven't read much of Lee Weeks' stuff, he did lots of great Daredevil stuff that he actually wrote too, which I'd highly recommend too.
Oh, cool.
Good shit. So yeah, that's a great issue of Batman. So there we go, everybody. We're big Batman fans again.
Hey, keeping you on your toes.
Did you continue reading Justice League?
No, I didn't. I decided I was firmly done with that shit.
It was a better issue this week, written by Scott Snyder with Jorge Jimenez on art and colors by Alejandro Sanchez. It's still absolute fucking nonsense, but it knew that it was in this issue. It didn't try and cram bullshit, super serious pseudoscience down my gullet. But I think what's fun about this is that there's so many players on each team. You have the Legion of Doom with Lex Luthor and Joker and Sinestro, Black Manta, Cheetah, and Gorilla Grodd. In fact, there's some great Grodd stuff that you would have really loved in this.
I love Grodd.
Some like early moments from Grodd's life. Of course, there is some bullshit featuring the new color of Lantern that you would probably hate, but it's just fun seeing both teams divvied up going head to head against each other. With some pretty fun dialogue and seeing Lex Luthor just win. It's always fun. These issues are always kind of fun where like the bad guys just wipe the floor with the Justice League. Yeah, pretty fun. Fun issue. I'm glad I kept reading.
Nice.
Injustice 2. How about this?
Yep.
Because as much as I like Justice League, this is so much more fun. Injustice 2 is written by Tom Taylor. This issue featured art by someone whose name is Zermanico.
Great.
With colors by Jay Nanjian.
I have a question.
Yes, please.
So Guy Gardner is a figment of Hal Jordan's imagination?
Well, only because he died. Remember I told you this last time?
Yeah, I forgot.
Hal allowed Guy Gardner to be killed by Sinestro.
Oh.
Because he regrets it so much. Guy Gardner now appears as a figment of Hal Jordan's imagination.
Great.
And it's really fun. It's like the best version of Guy Gardner I've read in ages, and he's like a fucking specter.
Yeah, it works.
the kind of crux of the action now is that the Red Lanterns have made Starro a Red Lantern. And so they have Starro's mind control power plus his unmatched rage. And basically they completely like decimate the Guardians and most of the Green Lantern Corps, and it looks like it's going to be up to Blue Beetle, fucking
Lobo,
some Kara, not Kara, who's Wonder Girl, what is that,
Cassie
and
Connor
to save the day,
and Booster.
So like that, just if you were a DC nut like I once was, that is just absolute crack.
Yeah. This was a good, fun issue.
Makes you wish that Tom Taylor was just riding the league.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely agreed. Good shit, though.
Good shit.
I read the last issue of Batman, The Brave and the Bold, Batman and Wonder Woman, written and illustrated by Liam Sharp. And this is the Batman and Wonder Woman Take Mythical Island book, but fucking hell, I would follow Liam Sharp to the ends of the earth. He is so fucking good. What did he just get announced doing at Comic-Con?
I don't know.
Something amazing. I can't
remember. I'll look it up while you talk up.
Okay, so this is like a murder mystery book, but set in Tiananog, the mythical city of the sort of fallen heroes of Irish mythology. So this is
Sorry, they're doing a... he and Grant Morrison are doing
yes!
a
Yes! Yes!
Can't wait to edit that part of the podcast.
That's going to be like, that gives me like really good sort of Alan Moore, early Hal Jordan, Green Lantern vibes. And I'm fucking so excited about that. Good Lord.
Nothing.
I literally am. Look at how good Liam Sharp's Commissioner Gordon is. I'm trying to hold it up to the camera.
Yeah, it's great. Oh, wow. It's anyway, grizzled as hell.
Grizzled as all get out. It's just the story. Who knows what really happened in it? Some crazy shit. And Wonder Irish Woman saves stuff. The day. Some Irish shit happens. Some people have horns. Some people don't. But Liam Sharp is the fucking man. And I think he's so, so talented. And this is a really gorgeous book. And like a solid Batman and Wonder Woman story as well.
What issue number was that?
That was the final issue. Issue 6. 6 issue miniseries.
There you go. Would you recommend it in trade to everybody?
I would.
Cool.
Maybe not everybody. Have a look. See if it looks like your kind of thing. But if you like comics about Ireland and Batman.
Batman. Maybe. Does Batman say, die, Dickie, die, dumb, doe at any point?
No.
Damn. No sale. The Wildstorm issue number 15 came out this week with one of the best covers I've seen in a while, which was lovingly recreated by the King's Comics staff on the King's Comics Instagram, which is
at King's Comics.
At King's Comics, featuring Jim, the aforementioned poison chef.
Yeah.
with a wool based alien bursting out of his face. Very cool stuff.
He was like, why do I have to do it? And I was like, because casting, Jim. Who else is that supposed to be? Anyway.
So the one thing that I know for sure while reading this very insane series by Warren Ellis, John Davis Hunt, and S. Bucciolato. Is it? Yep, Bucciolato, whoever that is. The one thing I know is that, you know, no matter how batshit insane and how many new characters are added and how hard to follow the plots can sometimes be, this is mostly about a war between Earth and space, and
yes,
the two evil white men who lead both of those, both of the organizations on both of them. We're meeting like various people who have been given gifts from alien races that kind of manifest as different superpowers. Some of them are working with different organizations. Some of them are being hunted down by outliers. Man, this is just a very, very cool series. And whenever Warren Ellis writes a mostly silent action, like, you know, 6 pages of action for John Davis Hunt to draw, it is as good as comics get.
Yes.
Because that man can draw a hell of an action scene. And I would love to see Warren Ellis's script, you know, if he leaves it all up to John Davis Hunt, or if he, you know, painstakingly describes what happens in each one, because
totally.
I wouldn't be surprised at either, to be honest.
This is full of like classic Warren Ellis, really dark humor and really sort of horrible, obnoxious characters who you just kind of love because they're so hilarious. And it's grim and it's violent and it's funny and it's gory and it's brilliant.
Yep, very, very good shit.
Everyone's swearing and drinking whiskey and fucking coffee, whatever.
Hell yeah. Fuck Batman.
Fuck Batman. Come on, that was great.
Are you excited for the Titan series?
The chance that I will watch it is so slim.
Because you have to subscribe to a special DC network just to get access to it.
Yeah, there's no fucking way I'm doing that. But that made me laugh a lot. That made me laugh a lot. That was almost enough to convince me.
That's the most, like, you know, for a company known for being tone deaf, like, at the best of times, that was amazingly, like which fans asked for this? All right.
I love it.
Instead of releasing the Snyder Cut of Justice League, they decided to make an entire series based on the spirit of the Snyder Cut. Oh, my God. If I was a DC writer right now, I would make a new villain for the Justice League to fight called Snyder Cut.
I think they might get in trouble if they did that.
That'd be great. Deathbed is the finale. Gave us the finale this week, the 6th issue of this Vertigo series, written by Joshua Williamson with art by Riley Rosmo and Ivan Placencia, about a famous adventurer who, upon his deathbed, realized that he does not want to be forgotten and wants a writer who has accomplished comparatively little in her life to basically, you know, take down all of his incredible adventures so that no one will remember him as anything less than an incredible hero.
Mm-hmm.
This was a pretty, at times, bizarre series where we learnt, you know, the extent of this adventurer's crazy past and the awful things that he did while having adventures and the repercussions these adventures had on entire planets, let alone people. It came to a pretty sweet finale that I wasn't expecting about, you know, how maybe this writer lived as full a life as he did.
Yeah. Also, we haven't been able to do this for a little while, but Dong Watch, mirroring the first issue in which a old man jumps out of bed and attacks everyone nude. This issue has a really old man with a really shriveled old dong jump out of bed and attack our heroes. Great. Thank you.
Well done.
Good job, Riley Rossmo.
That was a good dong bell as well that you
just rang.
Thank
you.
What was it?
That was my glass of water.
Oh, very good. Good dong bell. Yeah, there you go. If you ever want to make a dong bell at home, kids, all you need is a glass and some water. But I thought the series wrapped up really well. There were times in the middle where I was growing tired of it, but I'm glad I stuck through to the end. It'll definitely read great in trade.
Absolutely.
And the ending was sweet and funny.
And satisfying.
Yeah, definitely. And Riley Rossmo is awesome, and I can't wait to see what they do next.
Absolutely.
So, we've done DC, we've done Marvel, we've done Image. The only thing left to do is other publishers. I've got three more comics to talk about.
I got two.
Siobhan's got two. Boombox gave us two books this week that I read, the first of which I'm going to get out of the way very quickly. I read the second issue of By Night, the John Allison series, the guy who gave us Giant Days. His new kind of semi-supernatural best friends going somewhere weird series. With art by Christine Larson and Sarah Stern. Love the art on this book. Wasn't quite sure of the dialogue and story. I think this is just a big not-for-me series. And I need to go and read Giant Days, I think, because apparently I like that a lot more.
Bad Machinery anyway. As well is great.
Okay, cool. On to the fucking best book ever.
Yes. Fence. Love books about fencing, apparently.
Or only when beautiful boys are holding those swords.
Absolutely.
Fence is a book by C.S. Piquet, Joanna the Mad, and Joanna Lafuente. It's out through Boombox. It is about a series of young males who are at school, a school for fencing. And this definitely is highly influenced by sports manga in that we are currently at these like finals in which all the boys find out if they continue in their fencing scholarship or they get booted because they didn't make the school team. And so we have all these characters that we've met over the previous seven issues going head to head. Each issue we see like kind of like a main fight between kind of the two of the more established characters. And in this one we see Seiji, who is kind of pitched as the almost the antagonist of this book at the start. He's one of the highest ranked fencers in the world. And we see him go up against the captain of the fencing team, who is an older, very respectable figure. When Seiji mops the floor with him, the rest of the boys at the school finally know what Seiji is capable of as a fencer. This was a great, great book. Every issue, you would think that like there are only so many ways you can show a fencing fight in a comic, and visually, yeah, sure. But where this book excels is that they will. Like sometimes they'll give you someone narrating the sword fight and telling you how each character is winning or what they're doing that's making them not win and all that kind of stuff. But this one took the approach of we see the fight happen and then we get an explanation afterwards. Mm-hmm. And while it's just such a small difference, it really, I don't know, I love how well they communicate the language of fencing and how someone would be good at the sport versus someone who is bad, well, you know, comparatively bad at the sport. Mm-hmm. Also, it being so much about the drama of all of these young dudes at school together.
Plus, we haven't even brought up, like, all of the romances.
Yeah, totally.
Like, Harvard and Aiden. I'm excited for that pairing to happen. I can't wait for Nicholas and Seiji to finally smooch. Yes, please. Thank you.
You reckon that's going to happen?
Yes.
Awesome.
Have you never read like gay fan fiction before? Clearly not.
I feel really lame that I'm about to say no. But yeah, sorry.
Well, look. I have.
Send me your best gay fiction, gay fan fiction, please, listeners. To my house. Send it via mail, in an envelope clearly marked inside contains gay fan fiction.
Anyway, I love all of this so much. I'm such a Joanna the Mad fan now. C.S. Pacat is just... She's something else.
She's Australian. The writer is Joanna the Mad, the Australian as well?
No. They met online.
Cool. There is a great moment in this where we meet the various other highly ranked Olympic level fencers. Mm-hmm. We see them in panels. Seiji is one of them, and we see there's a couple of panels that we see. They all have amazing names. There's Jesse Cost. There's Marcel Baer, Sungul Park, and then there's a couple of girls in the mix too. We don't know their names, but I hope we see stories with them.
Yeah, totally.
I'm all for a book about a girl in a hijab. Fencing.
Yes, I want that. You can't tease fencing, me with that.
Fencing private school boys. That sounds fucking incredible.
That sounds so good. The diversity of this book is really like understated, but powerful. Like the fencing coach is a very, very dark-skinned black woman. And I think you very rarely see different shades of black skin in comics books, and so that's really refreshing to see, like, the difference between, like, her and Harvard. And it's just, it's such a delight. This book is such a delight.
Yep. It's just...
I can't imagine anyone so not enjoying it.
This and Runaways are, like, my surefire hits. Like, I'm like, yes, it's a Runaways and Fence Week. Hooray!
I know. They were the first two I read this week.
You fucked up,
I was
up,
just like, yeah, I know. But I couldn't help it.
But Immortal Hulk joins that accolade this week, I think.
And also my final book.
Yep.
Ether.
The Copper Golems.
By Matt Kint and David Rubin. Issue 3.
This is the second series of Ether. We previously loved the last one. It's out through Dark Horse. It's good shit.
It's good shit. This issue was great. I thought that this... I mean... I feel like we haven't been raving about this series as much as the last one, but it's very good.
I loved the first issue. Like first issue had that incredibly crushing moment where it's revealed that his daughter is the one interrogating him when he's back on Earth. But the second issue, was just kind of like antics, which were fun. But I like the level of drama and personal moments that this series often provides, and they brought that back somewhat in this issue.
And there's a mystery remembered the mystery and like the art. I will never get over how good David Rubin is. Like the colors are so phenomenal. It's like
the final
crazy
page
LSD
of this issue,
trip.
It ends up with the to be continued with our heroes about to face a bunch of scary giant mummies. But then we get like a... Do you have an epilogue page as well?
Yeah. Yeah. Like a little bit of relationship history for our Boone, the hero of our story. And is her name Violet? The sort of fairy who seems to be accompanying him on his trip. And it seems like they could have had a relationship. But his passion for his work always gets in the way.
Yeah.
Of any sort of relationship he might be able to have.
Well, the entire Earth, you know, is on his shoulders, so I understand why. But I don't know, I was confused as to when that takes place.
Yeah, I sort of just assumed it was past.
Okay. All right, interesting. Great issue.
Anyway, I love
great
this
series.
Book. It's
a
great.
Good one to end on. Ether, absolutely. A very, very good book with great art and great colors.
Mm-hmm.
That is it for the show.
That was a big week.
Big week, and I haven't even put my order in this week for the comics. I better do that now before Jim gets angry and poisons me. If you would like to come and discuss the show with us, and maybe give Siobhan, your own homemade remedies for gastro.
Oh my God.
You can find us at facebook.com/groups/serious issues podcast or just at facebook.com/serious issues podcast. Throw us a like. And we'll give you a bike. That's the rule. You can find all the comics we talked about on the show at King's Comics, kingscomics.com or 310 Pitt Street, Sydney. We're on Twitter at serious_issues. And we have a Patreon Which you can support the show and gain access to a bonus episode that went up shortly after last week's episode, in which Siobhan talks about her very candid thoughts after attending a Sydney-based comic book awards ceremony called The Ledgers.
Mm.
Is it called The Ledgers because it's named after Heath Ledger?
No, it's there, okay. There was a cartoonist called someone Ledger, but I don't know who that is.
Keith Ledger.
Keith Ledger.
It's a pretty scandalous 10 minutes, definitely worth the small amount of money it costs to support us on Patreon. Just a couple of bucks each month gains you access to multiple bonus episodes that we've put up in the past, another way to kind of get in touch and support the show.
Absolutely.
It's a lot of work to put this show together each week, so we definitely appreciate it when anyone jumps on board. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks, guys.
Siobhan, is there anything that coming out fucking today that you want to give a shout out to?
Probably, but I haven't looked.
I'm on kingscomics.com. I'm going to sort by featured, and I'm going to say Action Comics 1001. That's certainly coming out. Yeah,
sure is.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm sure there's some stuff, guys.
There's lots of other things.
Yeah.
Blackwood issue 3, that looks good. There's a book called Bone Parish.
Great.
Is that a book about a sex church?
Don't tempt me.
Let's find out next week. See you next week, everybody. Sex church.
Thanks, guys.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.